All right, we're recording?
Yep.
Welcome, everyone, to the Rink Rat Report podcast. After dark, we're recording very late tonight, after the Leafs game and after Jason's 10 o'clock men's league game. And as always, joined by Josh and Jason.
How's it going?
What up? Big week.
Very eventful week on all fronts. I mean, it seemed like no game ended without a little bit of drama in there. We're going to get into, so there was Colorado, Minnesota, Winnipeg, Columbus, and we're going to get into some Jason Spezza suspensions right away. We're going to get into the injuries and the impacts that that entails, essentially, as well as some NHL debuts in there as well, and we're going to be going over all the games too. Let's get into it. Jason Spezza suspended 6 games by the Department of Player Safety. Neil Pionk, related to that incident, was suspended for 2 games for knee-on-knee hit with Rasmus Sandin. Now, what are the takes? What do you guys want to start with? Where do you want to begin?
Just there's so many ways you can go about it. I'm going to start off with just the suspension itself. It's really frustrating watching a guy 2 weeks ago bite someone and get less games than someone throwing a hit, essentially. You can say whatever you want about maybe he threw a knee, maybe, but like that's all semantics, and you can't really figure out a player's intention.
On that play, Brendan Lemieux bit him twice. Yeah, watch it again.
It's crazy. Like I understand you can like the suspension because it's 6 games, whatever you may think he deserved, but like the criteria that the player safety goes with, it just doesn't make sense to me. There's never any cohesion or consistency in any of the suspensions they hand out. I think that's the most frustrating part for me. It's like you never know what you're going to get with them.
An actual lawyer to run Department of Player Safety.
Seriously. Like, and
is there no hockey player ever that has gone on to become a lawyer?
No, but they like the guys they used to have running it, like Brian Burke did it at one point. Like it doesn't have to be a former NHL player, right?
Like, especially a guy who's a fighter. Like that doesn't make sense to me. Exactly. I'm sorry.
I think because when Brendan Shanahan did it, he did a good job. Like he started doing those videos, which they do the videos now, but it's not George Parros. It's random voiceover guy number one that talks about it. It's like, well, this
do
is
they
stupid.
Do it for every suspension?
I don't think every single one.
I think it's only ones that Leaf fans are mad about.
No, I do think they do it for all of them. I do think they do
it for
all
of them. We
just
don't pay attention. Mm-hmm.
But when you break down, like the one thing I really don't agree with is saying that the dangerous thing is that it was a knee and he intended to knee him. I don't think he intended to
knee
him.
So what were all player safety's reasons for giving him 6 games? Do you have that lined out?
Yeah, I did. Give me 2 seconds. So
first off, he was saying that it was an intentional knee to Neil Pionk's head. They said that Jason Spezza lifted his left leg in intent to knee Neil Pionk in the head.
Yes, that's knee essentially Neil. And the Leafs disagreed. The Leafs wanted to say it wasn't kneeing, which they disagreed with. And the Leafs argued that Neil Pionk was eligible to be checked, which they actually agreed with, which is kind of the weirdest part about all this is that in the Leafs submissions and what they said on their argument was that, you know, like he did fall, but like he did have the puck technically. It was kind of dirty, but the puck was on his hand. It was a weird play. He had no stick. But then they followed up with saying that the Leafs said had Neil Pionk been standing and not fallen, that would have been a legal check. And then NHL player safety disagreed with that, which was very confusing. It's all very confusing. Like
they took the Leafs' point and was just like, not approved.
It's but
like,
also,
they didn't give a good reason as to why.
If you watch those two plays, which one is more blatantly a knee? Clearly Neil Pionk's, who's if you don't even have to slow it down. Watch the play. He clearly sticks his knee out. Like, it's not even close.
That he did against Mitch Marner last year. Something that he did against Johnny Gaudreau, I think, last year as well.
It was also late. That no one's talking about that. Like, the puck would have been gone for maybe 2 seconds at that point.
It went off of Hellebuck. The puck was in the air. Everyone was up looking at it, and he made the hit.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like 6 games.
Late blindside hit.
Mm-hmm.
6 games was kind of unbelievable to me. Spezza's like a NHL lifer. Has he been suspended before?
He's never been suspended before.
Was he ejected from a game when he fought Carlo Koliakovo in a third period or something
maybe,
like that?
Maybe. That's not.
It's kind of funny. He fought Carlo Koliakovo.
Yeah, that is funny.
Because he thought that Koliakovo stuck him earlier in the game. Kind of funny to look
but they also that. Start using like they use the fact that Spezza was upset at the Pionk hit against Jason Spezza. I'm sorry, that makes no sense to me. You should be using that against the NHL referees who failed to call a blatant knee on knee.
It's also like, okay, if you're using that, a play, if you're using that as like, oh, he had motivation to go and hit him. Okay, but then why aren't we looking at the blatant videos of Neil Pionk trying to knee Mitch Marner last year? Well, how does this become evidence and this is not? I thought we're only allowed to look at suspendable plays and take that into history. Not, oh, this could lead to... like, this isn't a crime scene. These are your own rules that you're just not following. So in essence, what they said... like, it's crazy to think when you watch this video, it's crazy to match the reasons for suspension to the video. They're saying that Jason Spezza, as revenge, was angry with Neil Pionk, knew he was hitting Neil Pionk, had nothing to do with Neil Pionk defending him for a full minute straight, but knew he was hitting Neil Pionk and intentionally kneed him in the head.
No, it's crazy.
That's what player safety is saying. I'm not making up stuff. If you listen to the whole video, that's a summary of it. Jason Spezza was angry and tried to murder Neil Pionk. Is that what actually happened?
No.
And this is a guy with zero priors. If this was someone like Brendan Lemieux, are we kicking him out of the league?
I don't know. It just... I don't know. I hate criticizing referees, but Jeff O'Neill made a great point. A lot of people have made this point. It's like, if you just call even a two-minute penalty on Neil Pionk...
they called nothing.
There probably is no situation like this.
Did you say this on mic or off mic? 8 games given out and 0 penalties given on both of those plays?
Off mic, yeah. Yeah, that's insane. 8 games, 0 penalties on 2 plays. That's...
and it seems like only Wayne Simmons got fined. Did they give an explanation for that?
Why? Because he was just defending his teammates.
It was on the cross check off the face off, I believe, where he like looked to initiate something, which is
okay. Yeah, that's...
it's kind of weird. Like I don't get that. I thought Pierre-Luc Dubois, after kneeing our goalie in the head and like ragdolling Matthews, would get like maybe something, a fine, but I don't know.
That's the best part about watching that game. It's so frustrating. Like the ref is standing right there watching Pierre-Luc Dubois shove the best player in the world's head into the ice.
And he does nothing about
for tense does nothing. Wayne Simmons goes to fight random plug number one on Winnipeg, and the ref's gonna risk his life getting in the way. Like, what are we doing
here? The refs did that twice.
Twice.
Mm-hmm. Twice against the same player.
Like, it's insane. I don't understand. They do it all the time. They break up fights like nothing. Okay, I understand. Maybe your motive is to have players be safer and not fight all the time, so you want to break it up. In that case, why are you letting Pierre-Luc Dubois just essentially stuff Matthews' head into the ice for 10 seconds? Yeah.
And he also grabbed the back of his collar, which is like...
yeah.
I don't know. That's like makes like it work. Like
you can say, oh, he was trying to get his stick back. Like, but then why is his hand on his collar?
You could break it down to this. Sorry, Jason.
No, I was just going to say, like, Brad Meyer also only cared about it when the stick almost hit him. I don't know if you guys saw. He was like letting it go. The stick almost hits him. It seems like he gets pissed off, and then he blows his whistle.
I don't like Brad Meyer.
For those who don't know, that's the same referee who refereed game 2 of the Boston series, I think, in 2019.
Yeah, that was brutal.
If anyone remembers that game, it's one of the toughest games in Leaf history. At the end of the second period, Jake DeBrusque clearly knees Nazem Kadri, and then at the end of the game, we know what Kadri did. He deserved to get suspended for it.
I have a full thread of all the penalties from that game. I remember it's somewhere on Twitter. And I even forgot one of them where Travis Dermott got high-sticked and they didn't call it.
They just blatant no calls. It's like, what are you doing? This guy has reffed 1,398 NHL games, and he's reffed 80 playoff games. The league knows he's a bad ref. But why is he still there? I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, you're right. 1,000 regular season, then only 80 playoffs. It's like...
everyone else around him had 200, 300 when you sort by NHL.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's from Scouting the Refs, by the way, just to plug them. They're a great, great tool. Yeah, it's a website called Scouting the Refs.
The other thing is, like, Joe and I talked about this beforehand. There's a lot of things that go into this, but, like, there's never discipline for the referees other than Tim Peel getting caught on the microphone. And then they kind of scapegoated him. It was very weird. that was, like, the one example of them being totally fine with reprimanding a referee before his literal retirement game, which was very odd in comparison with a lot of bad refereeing. Like, I don't mean to jump on the refs. I'm not usually someone who's, like, the refs cost us this game, that game. Like, refereeing is an independent variable in every sport. It's bad or to, like, neutral in every sport. No sport is like, we have great refereeing. I don't think anyone thinks that. That's just the nature of sports. But I really do think hockey has kind of lost the plot with their refereeing. It's, like, become very inconsistent game to game. regular season to playoffs. Matthews hasn't drawn a penalty all year. How does that make sense? Like, stuff like that is just
odd. The narrative around McDavid and the calls.
But like, let's compare it to football. The receivers that get the most pass interference calls are the best receivers in the league. Like, the most holding calls are against Aaron Donald and TJ Watt. Like, those guys get calls.
The highest draws in the NHL are Brady Tkachuk and Michael Bunting, the biggest actors in the NHL. I hate to say it, but like true. Michael Bunting has even gone on the record to say, like, yeah, I sell.
So did Matthews.
It was Matthews said it about Bunting.
He's a good actor.
He's a good actor. Like, how, like, does everyone have to in the NHL have to take acting lessons now?
Maybe.
And pretend like they've died every time a stick, every time they get slashed. And
maybe that's
Austin, a reasonable call?
Maybe that's Austin's fault, because like, I know people have been saying some stupid stuff about him on Twitter, but he's a very strong player on the puck. Like, he gets hit and hooked, he still has the puck. Like, he's just really strong. So,
but also to draw calls and to be that calm and to not like cheap shot someone, that's an asset to have. Mm-hmm. You have your Kyle Clifford, Wayne Simmonds, Nick Ritchies to take care of the other stuff. Like, if your best player is not like is restraining himself and is able to show that much discipline, like, that's a positive.
Yeah. And so however he gets the penalty on that play is just crazy.
Stupid.
Yeah. The offsetting minors. But the my main point is, like, is anybody in hockey happy with the way that the league is officiated? No.
Not at all.
Other than Gary Bettman, when Ron McLean asked him in the Stanley Cup final, he kind of like said, we think our officiating's been really good in the playoffs. It's like, dude, come on. It's embarrassing. But I don't know if it's going to change, honestly. I think a lot of people hope it changes for, like, even the simple reason of we're kind of past the suspension, but like, Matthews and McDavid getting more calls and like rewarding the good players. But
I mean, McDavid just got suspended as well for one game. I don't know if
he got suspended for a game.
Yeah.
That was soft. That was
he
I
got,
don't
but
think
no,
that
he
was,
got kicked out of he got ejected.
He didn't get suspended. There's
it
no
was early.
Way.
He got ejected early.
But maybe. I also don't even think he should have been ejected
but
for that.
Part of the reason why he
it was a penalty, but
part of the reason why he did it though is because he got like hit cheap shot, no call, and he felt like he had taken to we shouldn't be leaving players feeling like that they should have to take stuff into their own hands.
That's you're right. That's the
it's,
problem.
And that's the problem.
It's going to get dangerous.
Yeah. And like, I guess maybe I don't know. Maybe that goes in the way of fighting. And if that means getting rid of fighting, then get rid of it. I don't know. But again, like, if you're going to let guys fight, then why are we breaking up fights the instant they happen? Like, what is the purpose?
Like, that's
it's
the
so
thing.
Confusing.
Like, Wayne Simmonds is using technically in the rules the allowed way to police the game, or like the allowed way to get retribution, even though that's bad, on someone else, which is to fight. But that's not even allowed. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think the NHL is trying to change, like, well, slowly trying to shape how they referee, but it's never going to work. All the refs have been reffing since the year 2000, 1999, going through scouting the refs. Until these guys, unfortunately, are no longer referees, I feel like we're going to have to put up with this, unfortunately. But
I got to look that up. I think I know of one that is
recent, but we need more recent. Like,
no, there are a ton that are recent.
But those guys don't get playoff.
They don't
games.
They don't get games at all. Yeah, some of them only have 14 career games from 2019.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
And yeah, like, I'm sure George Parros is a really smart, nice guy. Like, I don't think anyone thinks he should be the head player safety.
And I know you're saying that Brandon Shanahan, I guess, was technically like a fighter when he played, but he's also like was a star. He scored almost point per game.
Well, he wasn't a fighter. He fought, but
he was
like.
But George Parros says, he is a fighter. He had 30 points in 600 NHL games. Like, that guy is not the guy you want to be protecting the stars of the NHL.
It's because he went to Princeton. So, like, the idea is that he's smart, which I'm sure he is smart, but like playing a D1 sport kind of changes the admissions for people.
That is true.
But yeah, I think the Leafs are planning to appeal. I do think there's a chance that suspension gets reduced.
Yeah, I really do. Based on their reasoning that they outlined in that video very nicely, I think it's going, like, the goalposts on some of their reasoning and such is like, and their evidence, it's like, you're moving it here, bud. Like, I think it's going to be reduced to probably 4.
I was going to say 4, maybe even 3.
The biggest thing is that they appeal to Bettman, and then after Bettman, they'll be able to appeal it to a neutral arbitrator. Excuse me.
Bettman never.
He's just going to say no and pass it on to the arbitrator probably. But
I saw Ken Campbell, who used to write for the Hockey News. Like, he had a really long article basically talking about what we said, which is like NHL officiating is broken.
It is.
And what Matthew said that game, we'll talk about it a little more. It was a gong show. It was like that third period was just That was not hockey.
Exactly. Exactly.
But Pionk, two games. Did you think that was too light?
I think so. Especially with, I know, I don't know.
Injured. Rasmus Sandin is out for several weeks.
And lucky he's only out for several weeks, too. Like
It was a matter of...
Or it was the injury as well that they brought up in the player safety. And what happened 15 minutes before the meeting?
Concussion protocol.
Yeah. They announced that Neil Pionk is in concussion protocol and will not travel with the team on their two-game road trip in which he's suspended for both of those games.
It's oddly convenient.
How convenient is that? Yeah. Wow. Anyways, I'm seeing some names on this, like, scouting the refs, and I'm like, wow, like, some of these guys used to actually play pro hockey. That's kind of interesting. Justin Key, he was a minor leaguer. I think he played in the O.
I think that's also part of the problem as well. It's like, I don't know if those are the type of guys we want refereeing.
But they have to.
Refs, I guess so, like, yeah. Because you need to,
Yeah, you have to. I mean, what, are you going to take someone off the street? They don't...
No. I'm sure there's a bunch of fantastic female refs out there that should be considered for the NHL.
There have been several that are reffing now, but also you have to look into it. Like, there is a level of relationship management between the refs and the players, like it or not, right?
Yeah. Like, some do a better job of that than others, it seems.
Yeah. But I think we've nailed all of this.
Yeah, we're just happy that Rasmus Sandin is only out for 2 to 3 weeks and not
long.
The entire season, yeah.
Yeah, so. That was scary. I thought once everyone saw that, luckily some Twitter doctors were saying, no, that doesn't look like an ACL, but it doesn't look good. But 2 to 3 weeks, that was a sigh of relief. But it's going to be interesting to see, like, how Christian Rubens, if they keep him in there, how he fills into that spot. But moving on from that, some injuries and how they affect the Leafs. Marner's out, what'd they say, 3-4 weeks?
Yeah,
3 to 4 weeks
with a shoulder injury.
Travis Dermott, I think, is out around 2 weeks with a shoulder injury. And Rasmus Sandin, as we mentioned, out 2 to 3 weeks. So now this brings Timothy Liljegren in full-time. This brings Justin Hall, no more ambiguity as to whether he's going to play or not. He is going to play. And then the last left third D spot currently tonight was Christian Rubens. It's kind of fun. They had a 2 a.m. watch party in Latvia for him.
Oh, that's awesome.
For his first game. And then Alex Steeves, did you hear the story on that one?
No. Oh, I think
his, his family was in town to watch him play with the Marlies.
Oh.
And then they were leaving. His dad was on the plane. And he called his dad. He said, "Dad, I got called up to the NHL. Like, I'm playing tomorrow." And so he had to quickly figure everything out. But they were able to he was able to get the family in tonight to watch him play his first game. So that was pretty cool. But with Marner out so far, he was out Minnesota, Winnipeg, Columbus. How have you sort of noticed? Have they compensated for that, especially on the power play too? No Spezza too on the power play. Wow. It's two big hits there. What do you think about that?
So the way that Spezza stepped up with in Marner's absence, I know he's going to be gone for the next couple of games, and we don't know how long he's going to be gone for, but I was really, really happy with how he stepped up on the power play in particular. He looked great, and especially against the Minnesota Wild, he looked to take things into his own hands there, and almost, I know one of the goals wasn't pretty, but on the power play,
The two nice ones were on the power play.
Yeah, so he got a goal and assist on the power play, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's just... Yeah, he was firing on all cylinders for us, and that was interesting. Today with the
news of the suspension?
The call or Columbus game.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Kosh did a pretty good job working on the power play in front of the net. So,
yeah,
I think our power play seems to be doing okay.
Scored two unique goals is good to see.
Yeah, as long as Matthews and Nylander and Tavares just keep trying to do their thing, I think we'll be okay there. The power play's been good this year. We're happy with it.
Is it a slight to Marner to say that it's kind of a wash between him and Jason Spezza on the power play?
Probably, yeah.
You think Marner's a lot better?
I think Marner's a lot better.
It's different, but it's just different. Like, Spezza will look to shoot more, which means Austin Matthews probably shoots less, right? Like, that's the one thing you'd think about there. Also, like, the thing with Spezza is he's really good in spurts, which is good.
Yeah.
But then, like, the second power play also didn't score for, like, I don't know how many games there for a while.
Yeah,
like they started hot and then they just didn't score at all. So
he is really good in spurts. And when you look at it, like, he's not the best, I want to say, at sustained zone entries. He when he gets the cycle going, it's good. But there are times where it's very, very quick, and it's because he's coming in off the rush with not a lot of speed, and he tries to put a pass across into a dangerous area, hits a skate, goes back the other way. Like, he's not the fleetest of foot. He's not the greatest, I would say, at zone entries, but he has a really, really good shot still. He's still a very smart player, and his passing is still there. So that's where you – and guess what? You saw all of that come together against the Minnesota Wild there.
That's a good point, actually. One thing I did notice is that a couple of these power plays the last three games, they really just didn't even get the puck in at all. So that's probably a good example of somewhere where not having Mitch Marner, who's like your primary zone entry guy, makes a big difference. So maybe not as much in zone, but maybe the zone entry part will.
And it's because it feeds right into what Mitch Marner's game is. He's not like Mitch Marner's a good skater. He doesn't play the game the fastest. He's able to slow it down a lot. Mm-hmm. And when he brings it into the zone, he's able to bring it in at his own, like slow the game down to his level and make a play to an open player and create that sustained zone entry from there, which I really, really like.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
he makes it in the tough area, which is like right at the blue line, right?
Yeah. He's able to make that snap decision, exactly. Get it to John Tavares or Matthews along the wall there and get the power play going from there. But to what Jason said, I mean, tonight with the Columbus game, the first power play of the game, we got a goal. That was awesome. And then we had the challenge, and they got to go back on the power play. That second power play sucked.
Terrible, yeah.
They gave up so many chances.
They didn't really, once they had left the zone, they didn't get the puck back into the zone. Morgan Riley like had a good game tonight, but he was just lost on that. They gave up two chances in a row there.
Alex Texier.
He just didn't even cut him off going to the net. And then Texier got the puck behind the net, and him and Nylander kind of just stood at that.
Oh, my God.
They just were staring. I don't know what happened.
He got a breakaway chance and then got the rebound and tried to put it around
on a penalty kill.
On a penalty kill. Yeah. That was a tough, tough look.
I liked the first. I thought that was a super soft goal by Merzlikins to let in the first Nylander.
I can understand why it was a goalie interference challenge.
I get it, because it was like, how did he let that in?
Andrei Kashuk kind of touched his blocker. Yeah. I mean,
it wasn't enough for it, but I get why Hellebuck was complaining
about goalie interference afterwards in his game. I think if he were to watch that, he'd be like, hey, like, I don't know. I mean, the Leafs put up five in two periods on them, but still, like, I do feel like Kasha touching his blocker like that did impact him.
It may be, but I still feel like that was more of like the optics of how bad that goal was made them challenge. You know what I mean? Like, if that went top corner, I doubt they'd challenge. But it was like not the hardest shot. So the thought from their coach wasn't probably the like, there's no way he didn't get to that puck. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think was Brad Larsen a goalie? Am I thinking?
That's a question I do not know.
I believe Brad Larsen, the coach. No, he was not. I was wrong. Yes, I was wrong. I always thought he was a goalie for some reason. Maybe I'm thinking of Brad Thiessen. But anywho, moving on from there. But yeah, that's where we're really seeing Mitch Marner. I mean, in that first game against Minnesota, I thought Matthews' line was kind of having a little bit of trouble getting it going, especially with Simmons there. And that's where you really, in the first half of the game, you really missed Mitch Marner. I mean, going back to my stupid point about taking Marner off the penalty kill, you're really missing him there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How many penalty kill goals have they given up?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a downturn again. We don't know how much that is on Marner or opposing power plays against the Leafs. You know, like it's always tough to judge. But yeah, he has been quite a good penalty kill player so far.
Correlation or causation?
There's probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, Alex Kerfoot said it best. He said someone asked him where they're going to miss Mitch Marner most, and the answer was everywhere. And that's kind of what he does for the Leafs. He just does like
everything.
He's kind of involved in every situation of the game. Like,
yeah,
they need a goal, he's on.
He's fairly responsible.
Yeah,
he's
always on the ice if they have a defensive zone draw at the end of the game, right?
Yeah,
plays power play, plays penalty kill. So,
like,
it is going to matter. You know, hopefully he can get back soon. Can I do like a little like 2 second rant?
Yeah,
go ahead.
When Jonas Siegel posted that video of like Mitch Marner and Jake Muzzin arguing. Without posting like the actual hit, I think that's just like, I get that he's a journalist and he's trying to properly cover the Leafs, but that was like, you're just posting that to fish for people to like chirp.
It's baiting.
It was fully baiting. Mm-hmm. And then everyone chirped him saying,
I didn't see the hit.
No one saw the hit.
That's the point. I don't think anyone recorded it.
So, and then everyone said like, oh, like Mitch Marner's soft, Paul Marner, get mad at Muzzin. And then like, unfortunately now he's out for a month.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can't make judgments like that off of a video of two guys arguing in practice, which is, like, not that uncommon. Like, in Tampa Bay, nobody takes a video of Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman arguing. That would never happen.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, that's, I'm sure the Leafs probably see that and aren't happy with it either. Like, they give this guy access all the time to, you know, watch practice, whatever. Yeah. And the thing you post is, like, two guys arguing. I don't know. I think that's a bit slimy.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, especially, yeah, if you're in the camp of, like, you're not liking that arguing, like, put yourself in Marner's shoes. He's, now that we know he's been out, he's going to be out for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Of course he's pissed. Like, this is practice. He shouldn't be.
It's funny because the first video they posted looked like Mitch Marner was just, like, yelling at Jake Muzzin.
And he was
fine.
He looked fine, but.
Well, you never,
you don't know. Like, you can't tell.
And all the responses, like, oh, Marner's soft. Now that he's out for 4 weeks, the responses are like, oh, Muzzin, you can't hit anyone in a game. You just hit guys in practice. Like, you know how this fan base is. It's just a little slimy, in my opinion. That's all.
That's fair.
A thought. Now it's gone. Damn it. I can't remember at all.
But also, like,
wildly escaped me.
Guys getting into it at practice happened. We've seen
fights.
That's
what it was. That's what it was.
We've seen full fights in practice, like dropping the gloves.
Like, that is literally so meaningless, an argument in practice. I know. And I think even Justin Hole said it was just, it's meaningless. Think about how many practices there are. And, like, it's a physical game. Imagine you and your coworkers every day you show up to work have to go out and, like, physically interact and, like, compete against each other. Eventually, there's going to be arguments. I would think it, with your coworkers, probably after a week. These guys are out there for years at a time with one another, practicing and competing against each other physically. So a little argument like that, I mean, even fights in practice, I don't. Unless you hear some backstory to it, like, if you just see the fight and then it's like they're good after that, like, it's gonna happen.
It happens.
Tempers flare. I've seen it before. Like, it's no big deal.
But that's why, in my opinion, like, the no context.
Right before the Blues went on their run, Zach Sanford and Oscar Sundqvist, got into a fight.
Bortuzzo, maybe.
Or it was probably Bortuzzo.
Yeah.
Got into a fight.
And then. But again, like, my point is just, like, Jonas Siegel posting that with, like, no backstory.
Jonas Siegel is now canceled.
No, it's not canceled. I don't know.
I understand what you mean. But
it's also, like, a Toronto thing. Like, beat writers for other teams, like, go at people for chirping their teams. Toronto beat writers are hammering the Leafs every day, which is fine. But
they encourage it. They feel the flames.
They do a bit, but.
But I know what you mean there. In terms of the other two, Dermott and Sandin, I mean, I don't think it's as, like, well thought of, but, like, Sandin is the second best offensive defenseman on the Leafs.
Yeah, that's a big
loss. We
have seen
him used like that. Like,
that's
a
big loss.
He's a very good transition defenseman. He's the second power play defenseman there. Now Jake Muzzin's in there. Like, that's a pretty big loss there. And, I mean, him and Timothy Liljegren and even him and Travis Dermott have worked very, very well with one another. And the results are there to back it up. Like, they do play the sheltered kind of minutes, but they're excelling in that role. So to not have to take Rasmus Sandin out and put someone else in there that brings a different dynamic, that doesn't bring that offense, I mean, we'll see. I don't think it's going to be, like, the biggest of big losses, but it's, like, it's certainly an impactful loss, I would say.
It will, and I think it's going to affect our forward depth a lot more than some people might realize. Like, because those are the guys that Rasmus Sandin is going to be playing with the most, and we talked about this last week. He leads the league in defensemen for expected goals for percentage. And he does play against weaker. He does play weaker minutes compared. He doesn't play top line minutes, but he was first at time of being injured with, I think, around 64% controlling expected goals.
Yeah,
and having that on the ice for your third and fourth line is huge. You're basically dictating almost all the play when he's on the ice. So I think our depth is really going to be missing him over these coming weeks.
For sure.
So it's going to be tough. But
for sure. I mean, when you have defensemen that can't move the puck up the ice, like, it's tough. Hopefully Christian Rubens is coming in now.
Yeah.
He's a bigger defenseman. Hopefully he's able to cut off plays at the line. That's something that Rasmus Sandin is still working on, bringing that part, you know, up to par with his game, because it's not, I mean, the entries against are plentiful, we'll call it. So hopefully Christian Rubens can kind of step up in that sort of realm, and Timothy Liljegren can take over in the transition department. But,
is there any chance Biega's in the in the next couple of games?
I don't think Rubens was that. I can see that for sure. I mean, more experienced defenseman.
More of a puck moving defenseman.
Yeah. So I can definitely see it. I don't know. It's not the biggest Christian Rubens fan in the world. I know. I haven't watched him too much, though. So
no, it'll definitely test the depth, though. You're on to essentially your seventh and eighth defenseman in the preseason playing 5-6 role, right? With Liljegren.
It would be eighth and ninth defenseman. Think about it. Because Dermott.
Yeah, sorry. And Sandiner. Eight and ninth defenseman. You're right.
Eight and ninth defenseman we're testing now.
So that's going to test the depth. Even on forward, right? Like, Mikheyev hopefully comes back soon, but we saw Alex Steeves step in there tonight. Kyle Clifford, who wasn't even on the team 2 weeks ago. So the injury bug does hit, and sometimes it hits all at once, which seems to be happening right now. But that's why, you know, you test your depth. You test the top-end skill on your team. Those guys have kind of come through. They came through tonight. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what happens. It's just part of the game. Any sport, you're going to have some injuries. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. It was unfortunate. I mean, we were talking about trading one of Hole and Dermott a couple weeks ago because we had the luxury to do so. And now it's like...
Now it's like you have the luxury of having those guys.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I mean, you knew it was coming in some form.
Yeah, they were very healthy.
I mean, I was just hoping it would the injury bug was just Mikheyev and Mrazek. But that's not how life works. And speaking of Mrazek, he's coming back soon. So Joseph Woll will probably be assigned to the AHL soon.
I feel bad. He had a rough game against the Jets, really.
So with that game, I took a pretty good look and watched the goals over again and watched some of the plays. Like, I don't think it was that bad. I know it was a 6-goal game, but the Leafs' neutral zone defense
was terrible.
Was absolutely atrocious. And what are Winnipeg's top forwards really good at? The rush, quick plays like that. Like, look at all the guys that scored for Winnipeg in that game. It was all their top guys. And what did I say? Two or three of them were on the power play there, even. Like, there was some plays. Okay, the second goal, it was a bit of a muff shot. That's not the greatest one off the rush there. Like, should kind of have that one. There was one, I think it was the Kyle Connor. Like, the release was terrific. The placement on the shot was terrific. But it was on the power play, and Joseph Woll was looking over his left shoulder, and he looked over his left shoulder for way too long, and the puck was going to his right. He didn't get his head over enough, I think, fast enough, and then the puck came out to Kyle Connor. He wasn't able to react appropriately. I feel like if he were to flip his head quicker on that play, he would have been able to react better. I mean, he's a bigger goaltender. It went over his shoulder there, but like I'm nitpicking, but like I do think that is accurate. He did make some big saves in that game as well. Like he did make the saves in that game. It wasn't just like a 20 save, 5 goal against performance. He did make some saves in there.
Yeah,
the defense just didn't help him out, and even the centers as well. The centers were way too deep in. And I mean, you played Winnipeg 10 times last year. They upgraded a little bit of defense, but it's like they didn't change that much on offense. What the hell were you expecting? Just watch tape on last year or this year even. Like, it's all the same shit. Like, you know what was going to come, and the Leafs played right into what Winnipeg wanted there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not saying, like, it's not all his fault, but when you give up 4 goals in 10 minutes, it's like, how are you even going to come back from that, right?
Yeah.
Of any sorts.
It was tough. I think overall, you just, to describe it, it's tough, but I don't think it was like, oh, Joseph Woll, that was a bad performance there. It was like, that's where I'm like, okay, like there are a lot of positives to take from that game for sure.
Yeah, game was crazy though. Like it's hard when there's 4 games, it's hard for us to get like in depth on all of these games, but that Winnipeg game was just
8 o'clock on a Sunday. Just got you jacked up.
I was so mad.
Oh my god. My that game was crazy. Like just Jason
was going nuts at the TV.
Yeah. There was one play in the corner when Bunting got an offsetting penalty with I don't know who, but the guy literally, he just got, like, Bunting tied the guy up, and he turned around and swung at him. I was, like, literally going nuts, and it was offsetting. I just did not understand. We talked about the referee. I just didn't understand.
No, but Logan Stanley, like, he's not fighting Simmons.
That guy's the biggest
loser. Right, not fighting Simmons was whatever, like, 10 minutes left in the period when Simmons was looking for a fight. And then one of the last shifts of the game, Simmons goes to hit Morrissey. Stanley two-hand hacks him before he hits Morrissey. Mm-hmm. Him and Morrissey start fighting. And then Stanley jumps in as the third man in the fight. Simmons still gets a good couple good shots in on him after disengaging from another mm-hmm. guy. And he goes off the ice like he just won the heavyweight championship. Like he's Muhammad Ali. That was like, I think
it was a game helmet. Honestly. What did he do that game?
Also, nothing. If you looked at Maurice when Stanley did that, he looked like secondhand embarrassment. Like, what are you doing? Like,
I just want to make a note. I don't know if that's like I was under the impression that that is a suspension. No, being the third man into a fight.
No, in like the GTHL, it is. Nah,
is that?
Well, right. It's just like a scummy thing to do.
It is. But it's I don't know. Anyways, but I was just gonna say that, and also the game before, was it Foligno hopping off the bench?
Yeah, that's an example of them just playing kind of by their own rules. Yeah. Like he changed. His intent was to get off the ice, and then he got back. Just because Kaprizov was late to get on the ice doesn't, like, I don't get that. That mm-hmm. seems like fudging their own rules.
Yeah.
And then the difference between like Kaprizov not putting one toe on the ice is the difference between 0 and 10 games. Mm-hmm. That makes no sense.
Yep. Yeah. And then on top of that, he ran Jack Campbell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his goal was complete horse shit as well.
Yeah.
Off the referee, straight off the referee's dick, and then he's able to get it and score.
There's a lot of kerfuffle.
That was a Foligno game. That was awful.
We don't like the Foligno's here.
The Jets game, just the end of the game there, like Sheldon Keefe, like just saying screw it and just double shifting your fourth line.
I like that.
I'm okay with it. I'm more than okay with that.
Your fourth line being Kyle Clifford, Wayne Simmons. Who else was out
Nick
there?
Ritchie.
Nick Ritchie out was there. Out there, like, and mm-hmm. Paul Maurice was going nuts too. It's like,
okay, relax, that guy's a joke. No offense, he's a joke.
I don't understand how he's still coaching in the NHL. Don't he's supposed to be a defensive mind coach, and this has been one of the worst defensive it's teams in the NHL for his entire tenure.
Like that team should be way better. Sorry,
yeah.
Like,
without Connor Hellebuck, they would be. They'd be in a lot of trouble.
And Maurice is like screaming like an maybe. Losing his mind over what roster? You need a guy on our
roster
team.
Roster a tougher team then.
And also like he must have lost control of his team because this is the third the amount of dirty stuff Winnipeg has done just in the last calendar year. If you look at the Jake Evans hit, if you look at even what Morrissey did 2 weeks ago on an empty net where he turned around and slashed a guy.
That was crazy.
That was insane. Like that is like it's not even gritty. That's just embarrassing. To me that is just an embarrassment
and then
to the
post game saying like Who was it? Was it Pierre-Luc Dubois who said nothing's better than like being the whoever said it?
That was Shifley.
Said, "Is there anything better than being the Leafs? Like, yeah, like winning in the playoffs, like the Stanley Cup. Like, that was so weird. I don't know.
Maybe beating the Hurricanes, like you did not do tonight.
No, but even like if
they got 18 shots on goal tonight.
Take a close look and watch two things. When Logan Stanley does that thing where he celebrates, and then watch when Shifley says that. There's some teammates where you could just tell her like, dude, like this is weird. Like, relax. Mm-hmm. Like." No, there's a lot better things than beating the Leafs.
Honestly, I think it was just I think it stemmed from us smoking them for the majority of the season last year. And then just them just being bitter about it. I think that's what it was.
I don't know about that. It's just like, I get that it's an emotional game and people say things, but like there's a lot of better. Like, I don't care about any regular season game in singular. Like, is there anything better than beating the Jets? Yeah, like let's go win a Stanley Cup. I don't know. It's just weird. They seem to be really into like beating the Leafs, which is good for them if you need that motivation. But
if that's your Stanley Cup, hey.
Like we're way to beat the Leafs on the second half of a back to back on a travel day where
with third
Mitch
goalie.
Marner and Joseph Woll in that. Like fantastic.
Much better than beating the Leafs. I don't know, not getting swept by the
Montreal
Canadiens in the playoffs.
And like honestly, even Shifley, I never looked the same off that hit to Jake Evans. Mm-hmm. That was. Like, I know playoff games are worth more than regular season, but that being four games compared to Spezza, like, Shifley was just trying to hurt Jake Evans. Yeah. There's nothing.
Did you see what he did in the regular season this year? Someone posted a video.
There was an
empty net. The guy was going around to wrap it around. He actually went to save the puck.
Yeah. Good idea, man.
He did save the puck, yeah.
At least he learned his
suspensions
lesson.
Work.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty crazy.
But the one game we didn't really talk about is Colorado, which is like a fantastic.
Mm-hmm. That was. I love going into the, like, there's so many, every single game it seems to go, like, when the Leafs are playing a new team that they haven't played, that's pretty much not from Canada, they haven't played yet, it's always, oh, this is a big test. Let's see how the Leafs react to this one. This is a really big test here. Like, to kind of put the onus on the Leafs, but it's like, when you come out and just, like, beat the crap out of Colorado, I understand it was Jonas Johansson, It wasn't Darcy Kemper in there, but like the Leafs really put the hammer down on Colorado.
I don't think a different goalie would have meant a Leafs loss in that game.
Mm-hmm. No.
Like, unless you had a crazy performance, they pretty much outplayed them.
Yeah. Like, when you leave Austin Matthews wide open in front of the net like that, I don't care. Like, Darcy Kemper's not stopping that.
No, he's not. I was at that game, and I was honestly kind of shocked at how easily the Leafs cycled the puck against the Avalanche.
Yep. And so, you brought it up. The Avalanche don't have the biggest defenseman.
No.
And so it's like when you're playing against a smaller D-man, it's tougher for them to interrupt plays, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying get a big lug that just goes out there and blocks shots. Like, you do need a functional bigger defenseman out there. Like, even like someone like TJ Brody, really good with his stick, really good at interrupting plays. You need someone like that that's going to be able to block shots, interrupt plays, but also be able to move the puck back up the ice right there. That's like, you're not going to be able to easily enter the zone and do whatever you want. Like, this is the NHL. When you have your like elite talent like Austin Matthews, if you give them time and space, they might beat you. They may beat your goalie with a shot, but they could also dish it to a teammate and then make a play from there, right? So when you don't have that in your lineup, it's tough. And, I mean, their only big guy is Curtis McDermott, and he's been one of the worst defensemen in the league this year.
Their third pairing, the Johnson and Johnson pairing, like, it's not good. Like, that's not – I definitely think they're in the market for a defenseman.
Yeah.
But I get it, though, because, like – They have so many young Patrick Nemeth.
They got Patrick Nemeth last year. He was their worst defenseman.
They have so many young defense. Like, Bowen Byram's going to be really good, but he's still young. He's been battling injuries. Like, Kale Makar is a fantastic offensive weapon, but, like, he's not really doing much in the defensive zone in terms of breaking up the cycle. And I also think, again, nobody realized how good the Leafs are at cycling the puck. Like, the Leafs are really good at cycling the puck.
Those top two. I was hard on them earlier in the year, saying that they should avoid playing this low cycle that they were doing. But they've grown into like a very strong physical forechecking team, which is the type of team you want to play if you want to go long into the playoffs, right? Like, you want to be like that. And I think Sheldon Keefe has done a good job really changing almost the philosophy of this team and how they forecheck. Because I haven't seen them forecheck like this. I didn't see it last year, at least. I don't remember them ever playing this hard. And I was critical of it early on in the season, but I think they've done really well in doing it, and they're kind of all buying in, it looks like. And I don't know. The Leafs are, they look good.
They do. Also, I know he still is obviously in the NHL, but, like, giving up that goal to Pierre Engvall off the rush that was, like...
Pierre Engvall's got a hard shot.
Oh, dude. That was...
Jonas Johansson.
That was a rough performance by him.
8 goals. So apparently, though, it was Jed Alexander. I think that's his name. Jed Alexander, the U of T goalie, didn't back up for the Avalanche because they were able to get their AHL goalie to the game like after the first period.
Yeah, there's been some crazy like e-bug goalie situations in the NHL to a point where like I think they might actually like have a designated emergency goalie roster spot halfway through the season. I don't know if they're going to do it, but they're going to discuss it for sure.
Well, I mean, Tuukka Rask is the e-bug
for the Bruins, which is do I pick him up in fantasy? Yeah, I don't know.
I think so. I think they're looking,
because they're Allmark is struggling a bit, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not been good.
Wouldn't the date to sign him be like within the next week or so? Isn't there like a certain cutoff?
I don't think it's within
Nylander.
Week. I think it's
Remember how Nylander had to sign? Maybe that's only for RFAs, but
yeah, I think it might be RFAs, but. It was weird, though, with Colorado as well. I was watching one of the games, and Kemper started. He gave up a goal because his blade fell off, and then, like, he just didn't play the rest of the game. It was really strange. I don't know what the heck is going on there, but they're goalies, but...
The other thing about Colorado is, like, their depth is not as good as it was last year. Like, not even close.
No. I still like Grigorenko, but, like...
I want to pull up the guys they had in their fourth... Like, I didn't even know who these guys were on their fourth line. And, like... I get, like, Jonas Donskoy going to, like, he's not the biggest loss, but that's a guy who's, like, on most teams' top six that was in their bottom six, right?
Yeah.
And then, what's the guy he's on? He's on Tampa Bay now.
Pierre
is a really strong defensive fourth line center, right? And they lose that as well. So
I noticed with him taking faceoffs, so you know how, like, it's advantageous to you to have your curve facing yourself? He'll actually, like, switch hands and then take the face off that way, so that like he's a left-handed player, but he'll hold the stick like a righty.
Oh, really?
I believe. I might be.
You might be right. I remember seeing somebody do that.
But like, he holds the stick like a righty to scoop it back. Like, I thought that was just a veteran move right there by him. But
the other thing is, like, looking at the guys that they're using in their bottom six, right? This is just of the most recent game. So, like, Darren Helm, for example. Like, no offense to Darren. He's 35 years old.
Yeah, that's a tough
one. This guy, do you know who Jason...
He was dash two.
Do you know who Jason Megna is?
I believe he played on the Penguins at one point. Probably the Wild, I want to say. I know who he is, but he's like an AHL level player.
He's 31. Like, what? You know what I mean? It's almost like...
It's Colorado, Vancouver, and then Pittsburgh before that.
And then Nicholas Obel-Kubel, who is like a younger guy.
He was a waiver pickup. I believe he was Philadelphia, right?
Yeah. So most of, other than Tyson Jost and Alex Newhook, who are your centers, like, it doesn't look great for them. It really doesn't. I know JT Compher, I believe, is injured. Yeah. So that's another guy they add to their bottom six. But I don't know. It just set watching that game, there's nobody threatening outside of their top four players, really.
Yeah. They're still doing all right this year. I mean, yeah, they're still a good team, but it's like...
They have the best defenseman in the league. They have one of the best forward lines in the league, one of the best second lines.
But you also have to look at, like, when you get to the play... I don't mean, playoff hockey. They don't play playoff. But, like, when you look at the playoffs and you have to play that chess-type game, and you have to look at the line matchups... Really specifically, especially when you're on the road, like, are they going to get beat that way like they did with Vegas?
Well, this is the thing that the Leafs have been getting killed for years. It's like the Leafs' depth looks pretty good right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it does compared to the
Avs.
Well,
you
want to
hear something funny? You know how I brought up last week Austin Matthews' zone entries?
Yeah.
Zone starts.
Yeah, yeah.
Against Colorado, I believe the split for him was 3 offensive, 10 defensive.
Ah, you kind of... Actually, but I did... I was at the game. I pointed out to you guys, like, without Kasha with Comp, and it was more of a... Let me pull up the exact line here. The Comp line that night was Engvall, Comp, Joey Anderson.
Yeah.
And that is not an ideal checking line against MacKinnon, but you give credit to Sheldon Keefe. In the third period, he used that line more, but it was a blowout. Like, he was just matching Matthews with MacKinnon.
I think he was also using John
JT, which I love. I think that's a fantastic.
So I did notice that. And then, like, they were splitting. It was interesting because he was line matching, but it was like Tavares. It was Matthews. They were using the top two lines against their top two lines. So it wasn't specific like 1v1, 2v2. It was 1v1, okay, then 1v2, and then 1v, like, they were matching it that sort of way. Top against top, top end against top end.
Just a good adjustment, in my opinion, right?
Yeah, which the Leafs have been doing much, much, much better this year. And it's been, it's paved the way for Austin Matthews to, you know, excel, so to speak, right?
Absolutely.
So hopefully they keep doing this in the playoffs. And I can almost guarantee that they will.
Also, I forgot the Avs did sign Ryan Murray, but like that's not he's a play break.
He?
He's injured, but again, I think I still think they're gonna want to.
Utterly shocking.
I anticipate
that Ryan
Murray them probably making a move to upgrade their top four, probably to play with Sam Girard, and then having Byram and Murray as their third pairing. But that's
he's
far in the future.
6'1", yeah, he's a good defensive player. But yeah, he's been injured since November 27th, so right before that Leafs game too. Interesting. I wanted to go over a little bit of Jack Campbell's week. I know the numbers probably aren't the greatest kind of thing, but just going back in my head and looking at the goals, okay, he gave up 3 against Colorado. He gave up 3 against Minnesota and then 1 in the shootout there. He gave up 4 tonight. When you look at the goals, oh my God, are they just ugly, stupid goals that are like just this is not a concern to Jack Campbell's play. Like I'm sure he'd be frustrated if he had to actually care about the numbers and be like, oh my God, like I'm getting slaughtered on Nazem Kadri from his knees putting one in, one going off the ref's dick and then Marcus Foligno putting it in, a tip that goes off the post wide open net goes in, one off of Justin Hall and in, and then tonight like there was the 2-on-1 where Alex Steeves was defending it, the flub shot that kind of just like catches a weird area on Campbell and then is able to go in. 0.5 seconds left. Max Domi scores a goal. So I wouldn't look at Jack Campbell's numbers at all from this week. I still think he was solid. He made some great saves in every single game. But it's like when you look at the goals, it's like, shit, these are ugly.
Yeah, but I agree. And then the one thing, Jason, I don't know if you agree with this, he's still making out so many high danger saves, which is really good to like keep watching. Because if he can keep doing that, there's no regression. Nah, okay, I'm not going to say that. No. I'm going to knock on one. But that's a good indicator of him continuing his good play.
Yeah. Exactly. And honestly, I'll take those crappy goals if that means we can get like a little bit of a lower cap number next
and
year.
And it's still... That's a good point. But it's still a lot of chances where it's... like we actually saw him make some good cross-crease saves, some massive cross-crease saves, especially tonight. But a lot, the majority of the chances, he's not getting a lot of those cross-crease plays. He's not even getting where it's like on the... you remember the Nylander goal tonight. It's not even like going across the ice from Matthews to Nylander like that. It's a lot of one guy, one-on-one, Jack Campbell versus the shooter, where he's able to focus on the shooter, challenge the shooter, and then 1v1, and he's coming up big every single time.
Yep, almost. Consistently making those 1v1 saves, which is really good.
Exactly, exactly. We want to get into some vanilla player of the week.
Do we have any stat surfing? I just have one little fun stat. This is more of a fun stat for the pod than like an interesting stat. I don't know if you guys have any interesting stats, but 7-7. That is how many goals in how many games that Matthews has since the Meat Mountain bet.
No, he has 10 goals in 7 games.
Is it 10-7?
Well, he scored in every single one of those games, including a hat trick and a 2-goal.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Oh, my gosh. I was looking at 5-on-5. No, my bad.
He has 7 5-on-5 goals.
Probably. He's on a 7-game goal streak.
Yeah.
But it's just funny because that stupid thing that was going around, like, oh, can Matthews not score on 5-on-5?
7 5-on-5
goals. 7 games in a row with a 5-on-5 goal.
I love how they bring up the diversity. Like, it's not something we saw last year.
Mm-hmm.
After that wrist injury, he was out for a little bit. After that, like, he didn't score for, like, 4 games. And then after that, it was all tips, like, all plays in front of the net, and you still won the Rocket Richard trophy. Like,
yeah.
This guy is a goal scorer.
Yeah. Well, also, it's not like realistic to assume every goal is like him on the half wall going bar down, like exactly. The Winnipeg goal, which he did do, which is nasty. But like, that's, you're like you said, that's
and
a goal
did that
scorer.
Against Colorado.
He did. That's a and goal.
He did do that again tonight.
You're right. That's a goal scorer, though. You know what I mean? Like, that's a guy who he's in the right place at the right time. That's just that sixth sense to know, like, oh, Bunting's got the puck right beside the net. I'm going straight to the net. I don't know. It's Bunting's not in the best spot, and then Bunting makes a through the legs pass, and he just pokes it in the net. Or Marner has the puck in the corner. Like, we've been cycling, but I kind of see an opportunity here. Let me just curl to the net and trust Mitch Marner finds me against Colorado.
Puts it through the defense. Yeah,
that was a great gift too, where Marner's like watching the replay and he's like, "Ooh, that was nice." Yeah. That's a good stat. The other stat I was going to say is like no penalties drawn for Austin Matthews. It's like
no, none at 5-on-5.
At five, yeah, but that's essentially like
yeah. We have 7 goals in the last 4 games for Austin Matthews, 9 points. And then Morgan Riley, big 4-point night.
He almost had 5, which would have been, they were saying it was been the first player in basically 50 years for the Leafs.
Borey Salming.
First defenseman since Borey Salming, which
what
would be great.
What else is it? 73 goals in Austin Matthews' last 82 home games.
Yeah, that was crazy.
73 goals.
That was crazy. Leafs are kind of turning into a really good home team right now, which is good to see. I believe they're 11... something like that, or 10-2-1, 10-3-1, which is good.
Keep up the noise in the stadium.
Yeah, yeah. One of the losses, I was there. My only game of the year.
Lance is 6-0.
Wow.
He keeps posting that.
Screw him. I don't care. anyways, so let's get into some vanilla and favorite. Jaden Sav 14 said Matthews for both. I guess because he didn't fight back, maybe. I don't know. There's 9 points in 4 games.
We're not putting him on the vanilla. Sorry. I'm using my 1/3 share in this recording to veto that.
Jesse Austin said whole vanilla. Matthew Simmons Bunting favorite.
Yeah. I mean. Interesting.
That's a good one. Mike Olympi said favorite Bunting vanilla Kasha.
Yeah. You know what? I don't hate it. He hasn't been as noticeable, especially offensively. So.
Yeah. Hasn't done too much. He has 2 points in his last 3 games.
The worst forward on our team in expected goals for percentage over the last 4 games. So
is Kasha?
Kasha.
Is Impia an analytics guy?
I don't know.
Maybe he is without even realizing.
But maybe that's it. Who knows? I got to ask him about that. Ban Stinky. Spets are probably my favorite most weeks. Yep. Most weeks.
This week in particular for me, at least.
He took over the Wild game. Mm-hmm. He took over that game. Yeah. That was the only reason we got a point.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Matthews, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, he was awesome. And then to show that heart in the Winnipeg game, I understand he need Neil Pionk in the head.
I don't care. I'm okay with it. Don't put yourself don't put yourself in that position. Simple as that. Like
the thing about Spezza too, it's like I agree he's good all the time, but it's so streaky. You look at his points.
Oh, yeah, it is.
I think I'm trying to look at it. Doing the math right now. There's a 12 game stretch where he just had 2 assists. Like he's a fourth line player, but that's almost why. That's almost the beauty of him. It's like it's just added value. It's like cherry on top when he can have these spurts.
750.
Yeah, it's great.
That's it.
And he's gonna probably keep doing it until he doesn't want to, right?
Yeah. Andrew Cheetah said favorite Matthews vanilla Muzzin. I mean, interesting to bring up. Muzzin had Timothy Liljegren as a pair, right, against Winnipeg. Muzzin, I mean, when you look at a lot of the goals and chances against, it's Timothy Liljegren by himself back there.
Yeah.
Where's Jake Muzzin? You got to read the situations better in that case. I thought he was all right this week. I thought he had him and Hull had their best game of the year.
Yeah. He actually played pretty strong this week. Yeah. Like expected goals. Like I know it might be skewed a bit from the past 4 games, specifically from the Colorado game, but I think he's the highest. No, sorry. Morgan Riley's the highest defenseman, but then second highest would be Jake Muzzin. Expected goals for percentage.
Which game did you think was the best? The Colorado game?
Well, tonight I thought
tonight they were good.
Yeah,
too.
Tonight they were solid. And then Colorado, they had solid results. I think Justin Hall more than a few times struggled to get the puck out, and I think there was the same. We'll just pick a game. You can probably find a minute stretch of him just flubbing it, but. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Honestly, this is a galaxy brain thing to think, but he just changed sticks this year. He changed it. He's using Jason Spezza's.
Did he get a new pair of hands too?
I guess so.
Is he playing a different sport?
You know what? Just throwing that.
Did he
up
go
there
to rosé sauce instead of red sauce before the game?
And then Jen Squisato said, "Pylon hole."
All right.
Hole in the running again. Damn, this guy can't catch a break.
Nick Ritchie, eh?
No, Nick Ritchie.
You put one in the back of the net.
So I just want to say one thing about Nick
Ritchie.
I think he's
got 5 points in his last 6 games. One of them was the Minnesota one. Jason Spezza's first goal. He got a primary on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know what happened on that one. So pass it to Jason Spezza behind the net. Jason Spezza somehow put it in. So I don't know how contribute.
Hey, he just passed noted goal scorer David Kampf in points. So you got to give him some credit for that.
And he has more goals than Blake Wheeler.
Oh,
that
for me, he saved himself this week by scoring a goal, because he would by far and away be a vanilla for me, especially since last game you're not scoring, you're not really providing much.
The Winnipeg game was tough.
That's the perfect game for him to get into a fight. Like, let's see that.
I think he tried, but
nobody wanted to fight on Winnipeg.
Even the perfect game to like maybe just make a good forecheck impact. Mm-hmm. Like you're down 5-1. Like do something.
Hit someone. Like,
but
do something,
I'm gonna really try to stay positive on Nick Ritchie.
Congrats on the first goal, Tim.
Congrats on the first goal. But yeah, the 3% expected goals for 3.11% against Winnipeg, and then the bad change, which I don't even know if he gets credited for. I have to check that. On the second goal, that was the worst change I've ever... That was the laziest worst change I've ever seen in my life. But take out the Winnipeg game, man. I don't know. He was okay this week. He was not bad. Scored his first goal. Oh, boy. It's the Colorado game. In the Colorado game, everyone was... Really pushing for him.
Well, did you see how excited Kasha was that he scored that? He was like, that's his boy.
So, like, if that makes sense, but, like, everyone was pushing pretty hard, and it's like, when you, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at it, it's like, how much are we paying this guy?
I know, and we're trying to hand him the goal. Like, it's his first
We brought
goal.
Him in to score I goals know. Because he scored 15 last year, and we can't rally our team for him to score in an 8-3 game.
It
is kind of funny when you look at it that way.
It's hilarious, honestly.
But hopefully the floodgates have opened now.
Do you think they're kind of run with him now with Kampf and Kasha? Keep going with that line when those guys are all healthy?
I still don't like that line, honestly.
No,
I don't think Richie's the guy on that.
Mikheyev might be the guy.
I think he's going to be the guy, or we'll see them make a move for someone.
We'll see. That's a deadline. Yeah, I agree. I don't love him on the third line. The results have not been there.
How about Max Domi on the third line? Unrestricted free agent.
I know they were talking about it a bit today during the game.
He's a UFA. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. I think that would be smart for them.
Mm-hmm.
We're just about to get into like the trade talk season.
Yeah.
Right around the World Juniors. After that, whatever trade freeze they have in the league.
Yeah.
That's one I'll pick up.
Kevin Fiala is actually, like, just speaking on him because they played the Wild. Kaprizov is incredible, but Kevin Fiala is in the category with Nick Ritchie of lots of chances for, and just he has one goal this year.
No, crazy. He has 3 goals, I thought.
One goal at 5-on-5.
Oh, 5-on-5. Sorry. Yeah,
I believe at 5-on-5 he has one goal. Yeah. Like, that's insane. Like, something's got to drop. He's way too good.
Yeah, he is.
To have one goal at 5-on-5. To have the same amount of goals as Nick Ritchie. But one more than Blake Wheeler. So, that's awesome.
And he had the longest 1,000-game ceremony I've ever seen to start a game. It was like 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's why. I had a game at 7:45. I watched the Winnipeg game afterwards, but I had a game at 7:45, and like I only missed like half the game.
It literally was the same. It ended at the same time as the football game, which a football game is way longer than the Leafs game. But
they get like every single player that he's ever played with to send.
They essentially did, yes. But it's nice. Good for him.
Yeah.
Really good career, honestly. Very underrated player.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Noted Atlanta Thrasher.
And Boston Bruin way back when.
And Phoenix Coyote draft pick.
True.
Suck it. Anything else you guys got?
Who are we going to nom for these vanillin favorite? I think Matthews and Bunting is probably a good one.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Bunting Matthews also passed Zach Hyman in points today. Just saying.
Not bad. At 5-on-5 or total?
Total. A couple. Oh, I think he's. I think he's pretty far ahead at 5-on-5. Actually.
Okay. So Matthews, Bunting. I like that one. Bunting. No, is, I would like to note.
Oh, he's way ahead.
He's second. I would like to note
that Morgan Rielly. We're
points.
Starting to see. We're starting to see a lot more playoff like Morgan Rielly. A lot more reserved. Less doi-doi plays in the neutral zone and at the opposing blue lines there, and also chipping in offensively. And I mean, got to give him credit. We trashed him on the power play. His power play. Got a couple assists there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good transition.
Honestly, doing
plays,
a better job just getting the shot through.
Yeah.
Like, don't push. Like, don't force it. You're a good player. Just use your assets when you can. I even saw, to close it out, my last thought, I even saw one play today where he was up in the rush and, like, the forward was kind of looking for him. It would have been a dangerous play. And Morgan Rielly curled around and went back and played defense.
It's good to see.
Didn't open him. Didn't try to force the play. Just went, nope, I'm pulling back. All right.
Yeah. Been playing well lately. For
that
sure.
That pairing has been really good the past it's couple.
Yeah, TJ Brody's in really that good. In that he's range where, like, you don't even realize he's on the team because mm-hmm. he's just so solid, like preventing chances.
Oh yeah, he's a horse back there. I love him. But yeah, Matthews, Bunting, and then who do we do for?
I'm
vanilla?
Gonna throw up caution comp for Vanilla.
Caution comp.
I feel like that line was not good the past 4 games. Just okay. Simple
think,
as that.
I think Hall's got to be in there again. Or is that too much on
Hall and Kasha?
Well, here's the thing with Hall is that...
He just had his best game.
Yeah, this week he's...
It's crazy because he has like 3 bad games and then one really, really, really good one that just drags up the results.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And skews them.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think Hall and Kasha.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right.
We should do a... Kasha and NHL player safety. I wonder who would win that one.
Can we just do player safety?
Yeah, let's do player safety. And the refs. Player safety and the refs.
Player safety versus Brad Meyer.
Yeah, do that. Let's do that.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Go Leafs, go.